That's the music that will open Friday night's concert by Sinfonia da Camera at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Concert starts at 7:30, and it's an all-Beethoven program, quite a monumental program, as a matter of fact. That was the beginning of the fifth piano concerto by Beethoven, known as The Emperor. And in this recording, we heard pianist Wilhelm Kempf with the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Ferdinand Leitner, one of those classic recordings, as they get to be called, and that one for plenty of reason. The performance will feature the music director of Sinfonia da Camera as soloist, Ian Hobson, and he is my guest on the program today. Also on that concert, the big piece, even though the Emperor Concerto itself is plenty big, is the famous Ninth Symphony. Ian, thanks for joining us on
the
show.
You. Nice to be here.
I have to ask, what on earth made you decide to program two massive pieces of music on one concert?
Well, the Emperor Concerto came about because there's a convention happening this weekend of
string teachers, I think.
No, music teachers, particularly piano teachers.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Illinois State. And my colleague, Rochelle Sennett, who is the orchestral pianist in the orchestra, asked me whether I would play as the featured artist on their weekend. And so we decided on this weekend. And it also, it seemed like a... We were going to do some other work, another choral work, with the combined forces of the Oratory Society and the Graduate Chorale. I think we were thinking of the Glagolithic Mass of Janáček. And this is one of the things that we were planning, you know, a year or so ago. But when I settled on the Emperor, it seemed that the other Beethoven work, which has choral forces, would be much better. So it's a big concert, but
yeah,
I think that in terms of length, it's not all that bad. But it's in terms of monumentality, yes, it's quite a big.
Well, it's going to be a tour de force for you, but by playing the whole concerto and conducting the part you're not playing, and then leading everybody through the ninth, of course. Two pieces distinguished by many things, but one of the things that they share, at least in my mind, is an absolutely gorgeous slow movement.
Indeed.
In both cases.
And the slow movement in The Emperor is this relationship of a third, in this case going down a third. The concerto is in E-flat major, and the slow movement is in B major, which is down a third, and so the D sharp is common as the third of the major, the main key of the piece. And there's an absolutely magical moment at the end of the slow movement where the orchestra finishes on B natural, and then sinks down a half step. The horns play B flat, which then leads us straight into the rollicking last movement.
Well, yeah, that is a marvelous moment. I'll just in case people just to share some of this movement with them, because for me it's one of the most beautiful pieces of music, period.
Absolutely.
Is this second movement of the Beethoven. Here's that same recording with Wilhelm Kempf on the Berlin Philharmonic. And cutting off actually just as the piano comes in, partly because one of the interesting things about that movement is the piano doesn't get the melody for quite a while. The melody starts right away in the orchestra. And this particular performance sort of provides a segue to one of the things I wanted to ask you about in relation to the Ninth Symphony, because it's actually a piece that I've been paying a lot of attention to lately, paying attention to recordings of the piece, and kind of gave a little presentation to some colleagues of mine about some of the things that one needs to think about when deciding how to perform the piece. And one of the biggest is tempo. And what I liked about this particular slow movement is that the melody is really clear and it flows, and he's chosen the
it's a very interesting tempo marking. When you read Beethoven's tempo markings, he's very careful about that. And he writes adagio un poco mosso, which is a very strange marking.
With a little
slow,
movement.
But with a little bit movement. Yeah. Usually you say adagio molto, or you know, adagio assai, or something like that. Meaning, I really want adagio. But this time he wants adagio, he wants the feeling of calmness, but he wants to flow.
And he says something very similar in the slow movement to the Ninth Symphony. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does say adagio molto, meaning really slow, but also singing at the same time. And the Ninth Symphony has contradictions like that all the way through, where this, but then that, this, but then that. And I wondered some of your thinking about approaching this piece. The Ninth Symphony now we're talking about.
Well, one of the things that I ought to mention is that we have, in all of the symphonies, we have Beethoven's metronome marks to go along with his verbal directions. In the piano sonatas, we have none of that, except in one piece, the Hammerklavier. And the Hammerklavier sonata, the autograph does not exist. So we can't really tell how authentic they are, but they're a little bit confusing, the metronome marks. But in the Ninth Symphony, and in the other symphonies too, sometimes they're a little bit faster than you would expect, than we hear today usually, but they're usually pretty close, and they give you some idea of the relationship between one section and another. The scherzo from the Ninth Symphony is marked allegro, but it says that one measure equals 116. That is 116 pulses per minute. So that gives you a pretty good idea, and it's fast, but it's perfectly workable, and it gives you an idea of the kind of spirit and flash that Beethoven seems to want here. And then he says stringendo il tempo towards the middle section, which is a very fast two. So yeah, da da di da 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 pa pi pa 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 pa, and the beginning is yum da dum bum 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 bum.
Well, here's a little bit about that of this. I was sort of doing a search over the last month or so of what I hoped would be the perfect Beethoven Ninth recording, which of course doesn't exist. And I found out that, you know, every single, it seems almost more problematic than any piece I can think of to try to come up with balance of all kinds of issues, including, as we'll talk about later, choruses and soloists. This is the one that sort of came out on top for me in various ways, and liking lots of others as well. But in any event, it's a recording from 1996 with the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Claudio Abbado. Here's the bit of the second movement. And it goes back. There's lots of repeats in this particular movement, and then written out repeats and so on. It's the second movement of the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven. And Ian, just commenting as we're listening, kind of a straightforward tempo, more or less what Beethoven wrote. But this whole business of, in Beethoven's symphonies, of having a descriptive tempo marking, and then having the metronome markings, doesn't seem to stop people from arguing about the whole thing. And, you know, there's some older classic recordings that generally take things much slower overall.
Right.
And then some of the more contemporary ones, you know, I have one that I borrowed at home that takes the literal metronome marking so literal that it sounds absurd and comical. And at some point, you have to find a balance.
That is a problem. I think that also in the 90s or the 80s, I can't remember, but David Zinman did a series of recordings, and he wanted to actually take those metronome marks and follow them, as you say, quite literally. I don't think that's the point of the metronome marks. I mean, you know, it's whenever Beethoven was asked about that, I think that he, you know, we just wonder what his metronome was really like. Did it work properly? What was he thinking? You know, but it can be just a very general indication of the tempo of the pulse of the piece. And if the verbal marking and the metronome marking seem to make sense, then that tells us something about the character of the piece, I think.
And if they don't seem to make sense,
if they don't, then we have to then we argue. Then we probably I would err on the side of listening to the verbal directions more than the metronome mark.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the monumentality of the piece, which is not only the size of it, because it was certainly the hugest symphony that anybody had written to that point. It also has chorus, which hadn't happened to that point, and soloists. But even from the very first notes, it sounds like nothing that ever was heard before at that point. And it's as if he was trying to make a statement and almost put a world in this piece. Let's just listen to the opening and then sort of curious about your notion of the progress of the piece in a nutshell, as it were. Here's the opening of the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven, same recording. So that opening is something that just, you know, there's not even a melody at this point. There's gestures, there's sound, there's an announcement that I'm going to tell you a story of some kind almost.
Well, it's really the obvious thing, you know, darkness to light all the way through the piece, transformation from maybe something formless, a little bit like the opening of the creation. Haydn. It's eerie. It starts out with these open fifths and tremolando, and then it erupts into something quite infernal. Almost in a way, it's sort of a diabolic movement. This first one seems to me full of foreboding, full of promise sometimes. There's a little hope that rings through from time to time, which is then vindicated in the last movement.
The four movements, depending upon who's doing it a bit, but certainly in this recording, with the allowance that the last movement is a little bit longer, are essentially equal length, but not necessarily suggesting equal weight in the balance of the whole piece. What's your sense of the progress from how this thing starts, and then the scherzo, which we actually heard out of order a little bit, and then slow movement, and eventually to the finale?
Well, the scherzo is the lightest one, the one that has the most dance-like qualities, and I think the weight of the piece is really in the slow movement, in a sense, even though it's the least heavily orchestrated. But it's this the form of the piece has this wonderful slow aria-like section in the beginning, and then it goes to a slightly more moving ahead 3/4 section, which is very comforting, and then goes back and then again to the B section, and then goes back yet again, and the each time that the main theme comes, it's more ornamented, it's more there's more filigree, and usually in the first violins, so they have a lot to do, and I found conducting it that the thing to do is to choose a tempo in which they can accommodate everything in their all of their notes, but not to dictate too much to them about how to play it. It should be like an improvisation over the theme which is in the air. But the violins play these quite elaborate scales and little rhythmic patterns. But it should be sounding spontaneous, as if it's being just made up on the spot.
And then also, if you start the tempo in a way without all the rapid ornamentations at the beginning, at a certain tempo, and it sounds like this is a flowing melody, as you get to the end, the more activity there is, the more it can sound like, wow, this is really rushed and hurried.
Yeah.
So it's
I want to try to avoid. Yeah.
So it's almost like you have to, as a conductor, to look at the end first and determine this is how it needs to go, and then go back to the beginning and set it accordingly.
Yeah. And in terms of just conducting technique, usually we want to conduct with a fairly small beat, not to have enormous arm movements. But in this particular place, I find that it's, you know, to show the amplitude of the beat so that the violins can feel the freedom that they have time to play all these notes, and that when we'll meet up at the right time.
So visually showing them space so
exactly.
They can feel a little more freedom.
Yeah.
Here's a little bit of the third movement in the same recording we've been using of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. I'm talking with Ian Hobson, music director of Sinfonia da Camera, who will be playing this complete work tomorrow night at the Cranon Center. The opening of the third movement, the slow movement from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, the Berlin Philharmonic, led by Claudio Abbado, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our programs are made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713. Participating with Ian Hobson and Sinfonia da Camera in the concert tomorrow night of Beethoven's Ninth are the University of Illinois Chorale, U of I Oratorio Society, and then four soloists, two faculty members, soprano Ali Watts Davis and bass baritone Ricardo Herrera. And then two other soloists. Are both students, Ian, at the
no,
U of I?
No, one is from the region.
And which is which? Mezzo-soprano Victoria Vizin?
Victoria Vizin, yes, I think she is here. And Humberto Rivera is the tenor.
The tenor, yeah. So any idea why he decided to make this last movement a choral one? Because, as I mentioned earlier, it hadn't been done before.
I don't have any insights beyond what we read in the books, but I mean, it seems that you know, he had to add these extra forces to it because of what he was saying, both humanistically and musically. After sort of like overflowing of material and vision, and using the Ode to Joy of Schiller as the text for this. So the kind of thing that he had already said in pure music in the Fifth Symphony and the Seventh Symphony, you know, the fate and the greatness of what mankind can achieve, this kind of platitudes that we talk about sometimes instead of just talking about the notes on the page. It's given more easy expression when you have a text like this, which is so powerful. And then the soloists and the choruses make a magnificent listening experience, let's put it that way.
It seems like the notion of tempo seems almost more important in this last movement, because he frankly doesn't write very well for voices, and it's extremely difficult piece to sing, whether you're a soloist or a chorister.
Whether you say whether he writes well, he writes uncompromisingly. He knows what he wants, and he's going to get it from a voice or from a piano or from a trombone or whatever it is that he wants.
He was a pianist, and so he wrote piano music that can be played by a pianist, and you know, there's probably plenty of things that are difficult.
I have to tell you that, you know, the Hammerklavier Sonata, among others, is practically impossible to play, even though he was a pianist. It's just as difficult for the pianist as the choral, the soprano part in this symphony is for the soprano.
Really?
Yeah. And whether he did it, I don't think he did it out of sloppiness or incompetence. I think he just wanted what he wanted, and he knew it was going to be difficult, or perhaps he didn't care.
And he wanted to hear the voices work, maybe. Well, here's the one of the interesting things about the last movement is that he essentially begins it twice. He begins it first for the orchestra, and has cello and bass sing some of the vocal lines.
He has the cellos and basses do the recitative line, which the bass soloist is going to enunciate just a little bit later. But also he returns. He has this cataclysmic opening. Sort of everybody's beating against the door. And then he does little snippets from each movement. The first movement, then the scherzo, then the slow movement. And then we come around to the repeat where we actually have the voices.
Which is this moment. And I'm actually skipped to another recording by the Berlin Philharmonic, also conducted by Claudio Abbado, simply because it was easier to find the track here. But I also like this very much. And the bass, who we'll hear right away, is Thomas Quasthoff on Live and Local. And we kind of have to stop there. That's the beginning of the re-beginning of the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. The other soloists, Carita Matti, la soprano, Violetta Urmana, the mezzo in that recording, tenor Thomas Moser, and the Swedish Radio Choir, and Eric Erickson Chamber Choir with the Berlin Philharmonic, led by Claudio Abbado. And the soloists mentioned earlier, plus the U of I Chorale and Oratorio Society, joining conductor Ian Hobson and Sinfonia da Camera tomorrow night at 7:30 for a concert that actually begins with the Emperor Piano Concerto, which will feature Mr. Hobson conducting from the keyboard. It's quite an undertaking, both of them fabulous, marvelous
pieces. But I want to mention that I am joined in the preparation of this Ninth Symphony by Fred Stotzfus, who is has trained both of the choruses for this, and so it's very much a joint venture.
And actually, I learned recently it's his Fred's final year before he retires from the University of Illinois. He's head of the choral program there. And best of luck with everything. It's going to be a fabulous experience for all.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Stay tuned next for a conversation with Julie Beiler, who is a music director or conductor, I forget the term she uses, of The Chorale, a choral ensemble based in Champaign-Urbana. They're giving a concert Saturday night called Celebration of Life, Music of the Spheres. It's Live and Local. And as we return to the opening music, you probably recognize that music, even if you're not quite sure the name of it. It's by Jules Massenet, and the Meditation from his opera Thaïs. So many operatic excerpts that you hear played instrumentally are instrumental transcription of a voice of a vocal part. In fact, this appears exactly that way in the opera, and it's heard here, and it was heard here in a performance by violinist Maxim Vengerov and pianist Itamar Golan. The piece will be played Saturday night by Rachel Kolbiakoff, who is from our area. She's currently a student at the Juilliard School in New York, and she will be joined by pianist Casey Dirlam on the concert by the Chorale, which is called their annual Celebration of Life concert. And music director of the Chorale, Julie Beiler, is here. Thanks for coming back.
Hi, thanks for having us.
It seems like it's been a while, but I guess this big span between the spring and now is kind of a big span.
Well, only if you don't go to Europe in the meantime.
Well, I was just going to ask you about that. You took this this big capital European capital cities tour. I heard a little bit about it from one of my colleagues here.
Three capitals in 10 days, three currencies, three. It's a bit much, but it was a wonderful tour.
How long was it?
10 days. We were in Budapest, Vienna, with a little stop in Eisenstadt, and to sing in Haydn's hall, and then on to Prague, which perhaps was my favorite city. Quite lovely.
That's of those. You said the first one was
Hungary, Austria, Czech Republic.
Of those three, Prague was the only one I've been to very briefly, and
it was a delightful surprise to me. In fact, I think the title for this 30th season's concert series came from our trip to Europe. The communists did not leave there until 89, and we were constantly struck with how many people were talking still about freedom on an everyday basis, as opposed to those of us who are just intellectual about it and don't think about it too much. So I began thinking about things of consequence that I maybe could drape some repertoire around. And I think of it as musicians, we all want to be in tune. Certainly as instrumentalists, we spend a lot of time tuning our instruments, and singers. So a world in tune came to my mind.
For the overall season.
For the overall season. And I had no repertoire yet. And then for this concert, the phrase music of the spheres came to my mind. And it wasn't until maybe a month or so later that I realized that this was from my old days in Sunday school, when we used to sing, "This is my Father's world. All nature sings, and round me rings the music of the spheres." So then there I was with the title and no repertoire yet. And it's been pretty amazing the way the repertoire has kind of just oozed into this program. We choose repertoire after 30 years. Sometimes you kind of run dry, and you do your own research. You listen, you go to concerts. You take recommendations from people who have heard great things and say, oh, take a look at this. You know, you have to sing this.
And you occasionally repeat things.
And I do occasionally repeat things, not as often as my singers might like. But one of the ones that I should say, first of all, that this is a Celebration of Life concert, as you mentioned. And when we came back from Europe, we were met with the unfortunate news of Dan Perino's passing. And he, whether you know that or not, has been involved in all of our 30 years. He was one of our first guests, Medicare 7, 8, or 9, on the banks of Lake of the Woods for our first Music in the Park program, and has just been there for us to play when Medicare disbanded. He became our New Year's Eve host. He led our sing-alongs. So it made sense to me that we dedicate this concert to Dan.
Who aren't at the University of Illinois, who don't know, Dan Perino was a longtime music education professor here, but also he was so involved in so many different ways, not only at the university but in the community, musically speaking, including training or coaching some of the folks who have been involved in your Young Artist Scholarship Program.
Right, and has been a strong advocate for us as a community organization. It was about music, and it didn't matter whether it was university or community, and as you say, He was always looking for young musicians to lift up and speed along the way. So one of the pieces that came to me was I heard at Krannert in February when St. Olaf made their 100th anniversary tour here. And it was interesting. I met a lot of chorale people who had been to the concert afterwards on the mezzanine, and they'd said, oh, we need to sing this particular piece. And it was a lovely lyrical arrangement of the hymn tune, It Is Well With My Soul. So I went on a quest and found out it wasn't published. Talked to the librarian at St. Olaf, and she said, well, Augsburg Press is publishing it, so call them. So I did. Well, no, we're not really publishing it, so it's really back to St. Olaf. There were some contractual issues. So I talked to Mary, who's becoming fast my best friend in the library at St. Olaf, and she said, well, I still can't let you do it because we don't have the arranger's permission, so go back to Augsburg. Maybe they'll give you some. So we did this for about 2 months, I guess, and they gave me some contact information for this young, turns out to be woman, who is the associate director of the Formosa Singers, and she was located and is in Taiwan. So through the magic of email, she, after about 3 weeks, answered my quest and said, why, of course, use my arrangement. So we're going to end our program with that lovely arrangement of It Is Well With My Soul. And there are just a lot of other pieces that have come to us.
Does the hymn that sort of originally inspired you in part, does that show up on your concert? This is My Father's World?
Oh, actually, no. No, just peripherally because of the phrase. Yeah.
As it happens, Ian Hobson mentioned just as we were, after I had announced that you were about to come into the studio, he said that's actually what they're calling their next concert.
Music
it's the same
Spirit.
Title. Because
really?
They're doing Gustav Holst's The Planets.
Of course.
And I forget what else is on that program.
Well, there were so many events that, like I said, after the repertoire began coming, then this terrible devastation that happened on the East Coast, and we premiered a piece that we had not done before in Europe called Requiem, which is just a short piece written by a folk singer, Eliza Gillickson, and it was her personal response to the original earthquake and tsunami that happened in the Indian Ocean and then the following tsunami. So it was just an expression of grief and a plea for comfort, and it was very well received in Europe, and it's taken hold in the choral world all over. So I had planned to do that, and then about the storm, you know. So it's been kind of a little bit spooky the way things have come together to be bigger than you had planned, you know, in terms of meaning and
Is serendipity the right word for
well,
that?
Well, it's hard to use serendipity in terms of a storm, but yes, that kind of just other
convergence.
Kind of, yes, a convergence. That's a good phrase.
You brought along some music of the chorale's own performances, of course, as you always do, and there's one here by a composer who we've played from you before, but apparently not this piece before, and you've become quite a fan of his music, I think, and Craig Jessup, who was here last time, a fan of his music. Stephen Paulus.
Right. Stephen Paulus is, I've come to give my choir some more contemporary composers, and Stephen Paulus and Eric Whitaker are two of them, and I like Stephen's work particularly because it's lyrical, it's the choir loves it, and this is a tune that you might recognize. It's called The Road Home.
And this is from your most recent concert, the one in April, end of April, which you called Our American Connection. Music by Stephen Paulus. Julie Beiler is my guest. She is conductor and music director of the Chorale, who are performing here, and they will be performing Saturday night as well. Stay tuned. Beautiful music, beautifully sung. The Road Home, the name of that music by Stephen Paulus, from the Young Artist Scholarship Concert of last April 29th by the Chorale, conducted by Julie Byler. And they're going to be giving their annual Celebration of Life concert Saturday at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. And it will feature, during this 30th anniversary season, as all of their concerts will this year, one of their past Young Artist winners. And we, in introducing you earlier, I sort of indicated one of those that will happen, although I'm not, I guess I did get around to saying, yes, she's going to play this. And she's Rachel Koblikoff.
She is going to play this, provided she gets out of New York. She was on a bus headed for the airport when I talked to her a minute ago.
So. Well, she's starting 2 days early. She'll probably
That's
get
true.
Here.
That's true, and she's... for good reason, I think.
So I printed out the whole list of all of your scholarship winners. You've been doing this since 1993, and she won, what, 2009?
That's right. It's hard to believe she's ready to be doing her last year at Juilliard. But she did win in 2009 and has been making quite a little name for herself. She's formed a trio, and they did some touring in Wisconsin this summer, and she seems to have slipped into the Juilliard mode really very well.
Meaning the, you know, the virtuosity factory, the virtuoso factory?
Well, that and the New York. I think she likes New York. I think it's an exciting place. Maybe not now, or maybe it's doubly
I'm
exciting
I'm sure it's
now.
Exciting, not in yes. the best ways.
I think the large and the many talented people are not off-putting to her. Sometimes that's a little scary when you leave Champaign-Urbana to go someplace, but I think she's thriving.
Well, I always had the sense that she maybe felt a little big for this community in a way. I mean, she's got this enormous talent.
Well, and you know, once the time when they come to be seniors, they're ready to be away from, yeah. away from home and get new friends and find new connections. And really, there is a lot of opportunity for her in that general area. I'm sure she'll make wonderful connections. And I'm really anxious to hear her play. This sonata that she's playing is called the Grand Duo Sonata for good reason. It's
by Franz Schubert.
Yes, right. And Casey Dearlam, her accompanist, takes on the role of an equal partner in this sonata, so it's not just accompanied by, it is quite a virtuosity event for both the pianist and the violinist.
And she's playing a good chunk of your program because it's almost 30 minutes worth of music.
She is. It's the sonata's 18 minutes, and she was willing to play one or two movements, and I began to think about it and. It just needs to be in context, and when you bring someone from New York, and she hasn't been here for 4 years, and I think the home audiences like to hear these students as they progress. And so it's just Rachel and the chorale, so I think it will work out quite well. We've tailored our program so that we won't impinge on her time. And as I said, this is our 30th season, and we really want to emphasize this part of our mission, which is supporting music education for these students. So we will have at least one. Now at our winter concert, we'll have two, and in the spring, perhaps more.
Two of the past Young Artists
right.
Scholarship
mm-hmm.
winners. Well, this is a piece that people may not well know, may well not know. I actually didn't. Here's a little bit of the second movement of the Grand Duo for violin and piano by Franz Schubert. It'll be Rachel Koblikoff and Casey Dearlam Saturday night in Champaign. Thank you. That's just the opening of the Scherzo movement from the Grand Duo by Franz Schubert with Maxim Vengerov. I'm sorry, this is not Maxim Vengerov. This is Vadim Rapin, the violinist, with, there's a few pianists here. Ralph Gottoni is the pianist in this performance. The violinist will be Rachel Kolbikoff, the pianist Rachel Casey Dearlom, sorry, at the concert by the Chorale Saturday night at 7 o'clock at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. You're listening to Live and Local. My guest is music director of the Chorale, Julie Beiler. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Craft League of Champaign-Urbana, presenting their 30th annual Arts and Craft Show on November 10th and 11th at the Urbana Civic Center. Opens Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 10 to 4. More information is available at 367-9546. Before we have one more piece of music featuring the Chorale, let me mention some other events going on in our listening area today, anyway. The Heartland Theater Company in Bloomington presents the play called Red. That's tonight at 7:30, and then that will continue later in the weekend, I believe. The March 4th Marching Band is at the Castle Theater in Bloomington at 7 o'clock tonight. The Pacifica Quartet with pianist Menachem Pressler will be at the Kranert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30. Ragtime, the musical, is being presented by Champaign Central High School tonight at 7 and then through the weekend. University of Illinois Number 3 Jazz Big Band is at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7. The New Rebels Players, based at the, will be performing at the Channing Murray Foundation on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. The Importance of Being Earnest, tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. The Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana presents Shakespeare's Hamlet tonight through Sunday at 8 o'clock and beyond. And we will leave it at that, I think. And we do have one more piece from the Chorale, but I wanted to mention or sort of go back to something, Julie, that you mentioned earlier, that Dan Perino, to whom you're dedicating this concert, was such a supporter of your efforts, of the student, of young people throughout, and he wrote some nice tributes to the Chorale itself.
He did. It is true, one of the articles in the News Gazette said he never left a performance without going backstage or greeting the performers, which he did. And then he also followed it up with letters, but they were wonderfully supportive. But Dan was a very straightforward guy, and I could always count on Dan for a true assessment of the concert. And I think he rather enjoyed that role and would come up and tell me or write to the group and say his favorite for the evening was such and such, and the men were so wonderful. I don't believe I've ever heard them sound as... So he was very specific, and I went through our scrapbooks and picked out about 7 letters that he had written to us, and then he would also write to the young students and tell them how wonderful their performance was and encourage them on. And he would say such things. Well, as you know, he was a great proponent of the music of World War II, which he did a special program for, and we sang for him for that. And we did a Civil War program one year, and he particularly was struck with Tenting Tonight. And he was quite specific about what he liked and what his favorites were, and I could count on him for the straight story. So I'm going to read a few little excerpts from these. I call them letters of review. And I, interestingly enough, still on my answering machine, have his last conversation, which was following the April concert, which he became ill enough after that to not translate it onto the written page. So I've transcribed it and have a record of that, too. So he was really very, very supportive and very just put us forward in the community with a name and a reputation that we couldn't have, you know, manufactured any other way. He was a dear, wonderful gentleman.
So the music of the spheres and also the music of the various corners of Champaign-Urbana kind of coming together in this concert.
Seems so.
Yeah. The Chorale, led by Julie Beiler, Saturday night in Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, 7 o'clock. And you can get more information at their website, which is just thechorale.org.
That's right. And it is a free concert, we should say, too.
Oh, that always helps with getting
right.
An audience.
We'll take donations to our scholarship fund, but no tickets.
Thanks, Julie, as always, for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's live and local on FM 90.9. We are 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And here's another performance from one of their concerts by the chorale, and the name of the piece?
Hark, I Hear the Harps Eternal, speaking of the spheres. This is an Alice Parker number.
Led by Julie Butler.